Well, a warm welcome along to this special edition of The Assist, sponsored by Free Super Tips, as we look ahead to the new style Club World Cup, which takes place in America across both June and July. I'm Warren Ashurst, and once again, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Langdon and James Milton to preview the tournament and give us a flavour of what we can expect. The hard facts are it's 29 days of action, 32 teams participating and 64 games taking place. We start with eight groups of four teams, and the top two advance to the knockout stage in the last 16 before, of course, the quarters, semis and the final in New Jersey on July the 13th. Mark, firstly, what do we make of the new format and how competitive do we think it might be?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, most people would say that there's too much football and a summer break would be required for the players. As somebody that, you know, doesn't partake in too much physical activity, I say let them play and I'll watch them on TV. I think the format is fundamentally flawed in that 32 teams just might be too many. And if you look at the globalisation of the game, I mean, it's not really that global, is it? Because most of the talent is stopped in Europe. So I think the group stages might be particularly one-sided and there could be some embarrassing scores along the way. I do believe, though, that once we get into the knockout stages, you will have, you know, 16 decent sides, about 8 or 10 of them really strong teams. And by the time you get to the quarterfinals, I think it will look pretty much like a Champions League quarterfinals. And what does everybody say, Warren? The best football in the world is the club football once you get to the quarterfinals, semi-finals and final of the Champions League. So I actually think this has been is a bit of a sleeper tournament. I don't, you know, not that many people are talking about it. Doesn't appear to be much hype for it. And I actually think by the end of the tournament, people will be glad that it's here. Maybe not the players, but definitely those that watch their football. And yeah, I mean, everybody, I think, will be trying. I mean, there's this sort of feeling at the moment that maybe, it's going to be like a pre-season friendlies or a post-season friendly. There's £100 million up for grabs to the winner. The clubs will demand that their players take it seriously. And I also think you get that competitive nature once you get deep into a tournament. Look at the Nations League. Like the four teams that were involved in that last week, the semi-finals and final, I mean, they were all desperate to win. And, you know, it's only, in inverted commas, the Nations League. So I'm actually looking forward to it. Not looking forward to staying up to 3 o'clock to watch Botafogo against somebody in the group stage. But once we get to the knockouts, I think it's really going to take off.
James, there's going to be ultimately people going over what Mark said in terms of too much football being played. But as fans and with no international summer tournament, there's going to be interest surely in it.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, as football fans always dread these odd-numbered summers. But yeah, I mean, no complaints about a lack of action, as you said, 29 days and this expanded competition with 32 teams. Yeah, I think it is worth noting, as Mark says, you know, only 12 of the clubs come from Europe. And I think that means it is going to be a bit of a slow burner. You know, you may be looking at the South American clubs, possibly with a slight advantage, given that they're in the middle of their domestic season, whereas you know, the European players have had a long, hard campaign. But even so, looking at the outright betting, I think the shortest of the South American clubs is 33-1. So, you know, it looks as though bookmakers certainly expect that the class and the financial clout of the European clubs will prove decisive. And I think, you know, finances is at the heart of this tournament. It has to be said, as Mark said, you know, some pretty hefty prize money on offer. So, yeah, I think when we get down to the quarterfinals and semis and beyond, it should be competitive.
Okay, well, we'll get straight into the action because we'll look at the main group focus now, and we'll start off in alphabetical order with Group A, which sees Porto, one of those European clubs that James was mentioning. Portugal, of course, with Palmeiras of Brazil, Al Ahly of Egypt, and Inter Miami of the United States. And of course, a lot of the attention will be on the MLS club, Mark, in terms of Group A, with Lionel Messi set to play a role.
Yeah, and the qualifying criteria was changed very late on to get into Miami in through the back door. And complete coincidence that Messi plays for them, and that backdoor route became available. I'm sure, but it's going to add. Again, it's funny, you feel sort of dirty for wanting to watch it because it doesn't feel right into Miami of squeezed in when the qualifying criteria had already been announced, and then into Miami with Infantino sort of on the pitch declaring that they were worthy of a spot in this new Club World Cup. But yeah, do I want to watch Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, and Busquets one more time? Yeah, of course I do. So interested to see how they go. I think that this is the weakest of the eight groups. Porto were a distant third in Portugal this season. Looking forward from a Palmeiras point of view, they've got a player called Estevão, who's going to Chelsea for a load of money. Interested to see how he goes. And then this, I think, is going to be the beauty of this competition. And Warren, you're old enough, I hope you don't mind me saying, to remember that there would have been World Cups when, you literally didn't know that the players that were about to appear in front of your eyes, and they would go on to, potentially become superstars. I think we've got that to some extent in this competition because I don't know that much about the Al Ahly squad. I know that they're, in terms of African teams, a historic team, and one that's, won a lot of stuff in the continent and domestically, but I wouldn't know too many of their players. So interested to see how they get on. But yeah, definitely the weakest of the eight groups.
Yeah, I'm old enough to go back to the days of Carlos Valderrama and Freddie Rincon and people like that making a name for themselves at the World Cup. I mean, Mark's already alluded to it there, James. Porto probably, if not the weakest European side, one of the most weakened sides from our continent going into this tournament.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the qualification criteria for Europe looks back over, I think, the last 4 years of kind of UEFA performances. So you're not getting the teams who are absolutely in red hot form. Possibly, obviously, Liverpool, Barcelona, Arsenal not appearing. Yeah, Porto had a disappointing league campaign. Took 1 point from four games against Champions Sporting and runners up Benfica. Obviously, those are their big fixtures of the season in Portugal. Yeah, I think they look kind of fairly uneasy favourites for this group. And as we've mentioned, into Miami. The force certainly with them. I think the organisers would love to see them go deep into the tournament. Mark's mentioned the competitive edge that professional footballers always find, no matter what the tournament. When you've got Busquets in midfield and you're managed by Javier Mascherano, I think Inter are not going to be pulling out of any challenges. And around 6-4 to qualify in what looks a fairly soft section might be worth a bet.
I just thought, I mean, I'm not having a bet in this group, Warren, but if I were to point people in the direction of one, I'd be looking at maybe Al Ahly to qualify at 9-4. They are, I think, the best African team. They lost in the semis of the African Champions League, but in the semi-finals, it was a last-minute own goal that knocked them out on the away goal rule. They've just got a new manager in. Not sure if that'll make a difference, positive or negative, but it definitely feels like the group you can have a go at somebody. So I'm not going to put them up as a strong tip, but if you did want to bet, I'd be going Al Ahly to qualify at 9-4.
Well, we suggested that Group A is possibly one of the weakest, James. Group B might be one of the strongest, with the lineup being PSG, of course, the European champions, Atletico Madrid of Spain, Botafogo of Brazil, and Seattle Sounders from MLS. What do you make of Group B?
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how PSG perform, particularly. Will there be a Champions League hangover, or was that incredible performance in the final and indeed their whole run just a massive confidence boost? I'm inclined to the latter view. I think PSG have got a great chance of going all the way and adding another trophy and finish the season in excellent shape physically after cantering to the Ligue 1 title. And it's hard to see past them and Atletico. Atletico got some terrific attacking talent, haven't they? Distant third in La Liga. Their away form was pretty patchy in Spain. But yeah, I think those two should be a cut above Botafogo and Seattle.
The interesting thing for me, Mark, in this tournament is to see how the South American teams get on. And Botafogo have been handed a really tough task against two of the strongest sides in Europe.
Yeah, so they won the Libertadores. They're owned by the texter that's got Palace and Lyon, and you know, there's a few issues there, isn't there, just in terms of dual ownership and which one or whether both can play in the Europa League next season. And obviously doing well, and there has been some business, particularly between Lyon and Botafogo. I wonder if Joel Ward might end up at Botafogo as part of that deal, but not yet. But I think Botafogo are unlucky that they're in such a hot group, because maybe in other, maybe in Group A, they would could have won the group. Just in terms of Seattle, one player I noticed for them, Ryan Kent, is in the Seattle Sounders squad. I think that the European teams here will be way too strong. And one of the bets for the group stage for me is PSG Atletico dual forecast at 4-6. So they can finish first or second in any order. So basically both of them to qualify. I thought it would have been a fair bit shorter than 4-6, actually.
Group C has also got some historical big names involved. Bayern Munich, of course, the German champions, are joined by Argentina's Boca Juniors, Benfica of Portugal, and New Zealand's Auckland City. Bayern, with that league title behind them and maybe wanting to kick on, a little bit frustrated, Mark, with how they did in the Champions League. Vincent Kompany will hope for a good showing here.
Yeah, I think Bayern will be one of them teams that will take the competition seriously. The Bundesliga has only got 18 teams in it, so they don't play as many games as what you would in, say, the Premier League, for example. In the Premier League, it's got two cup competitions. In Germany, they've only got one. It's one leg all the way through as well in that competition. So different to some other cup competitions around Europe. Don't have that burden of fixtures, and they know for at least half of those games they can take it easy. So I'm expecting Bayern to go strong here, and I expect them to comfortably win this group with 9 points. I think the best way to play it is in the straight forecast. So I'm going for Bayern Munich to finish first and Benfica to finish second, which is slightly different to the dual forecast, which is in any order. This one has to be in the correct order. But I thought Benfica competed well in the Champions League. Not mad on Argentinian football at the moment. It's a Boca famous name, but sort of not really as good as you'd like to think that they were. And Auckland, they're part-timers, and the best stat I've got on them is they're not even the best team in Auckland, because the other Auckland play in the A-League in Australia. So one of the quirks of the competition, that Auckland are here. I think they're here for a good time rather than a long time.
Yeah, we hear the expression, James, whipping boys quite often in bigger tournaments. It looks like Auckland City might be on the end of some difficult fixtures in this group.
Yeah, they won't be particularly encouraged by kind of Bayern Munich winning a Champions League opening game 9-2, I think it was, wasn't it, this season? Yeah. So, you may be wanting to play some fancy correct scores in that fixture. And Boca Juniors against Benfica, I think, meet on match day one. That looks like the pivotal game in qualification. But yeah, I think the signs are pretty good for Bayern Munich. They will want to kick on. Could this be yet another trophy for Harry Kane? We'll see. They've also got farewell to Thomas Müller. Jamal Musiala is fit again after missing the Champions League exit against Inter, and they've done some good early business. Obviously, teams were in a rush to try and get players registered in time for this competition. They brought in centre back Jonathan Tah from Leverkusen and the young midfielder from Hoffenheim, Tom Bischoff, who's already a full Germany international at 19. So Bayern were able to get those deals done, and that adds a bit more zip to their squad.
Well, we've reached Group D, and for the first time we can speak about a Premier League side, because Chelsea are in that group alongside Brazil's Flamengo, Esperance de Tunis of Tunisia, and Los Angeles FC of MLS. They were the late entrants into this, as Leon of Mexico dropped out of the event. Chelsea will look at this, James, and think that that's a, I would imagine, a pretty decent draw.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice draw for Chelsea. You know, obviously finished their season on a high with the Conference League and qualifying for the Champions League. And I don't see too many pitfalls for them in this group. You know, obviously Flamengo are rated the main dangers, brought in Jorginho after he was released by Arsenal. They are top of Serie A in Brazil, but you know, not runaway leaders by any stretch of the imagination. 2 points, I think, separate the top four in that division. So you'd say Chelsea should be one for, if you're looking for a group stage group winners acca, Chelsea should be on the shortlist.
Comfortable progression for Chelsea, do you think, Mark?
Yeah, not a group where I found sort of much to bet on. If forced, it'd probably be the forecast of Chelsea and Flamengo. Flamengo, got some names that I'm sure people remember, Jorginho, Alexandro, and Gerson as well, used to be one of the showboaters when he was in Europe. And even in South America-wise, De La Cruz and Arrascaeta both play for Uruguay. So I expect them to finish second. The Tunisian side, sort of when I looked at the value of their squad on transfer market, came up but really low. So I don't appear to have any sort of top players flying under the radar. And then LAFC, Hugo Lloris and Olivier Giroud in the penalty boxes, probably seen better days. And I know they've had a bit of a nightmare in MLS this season. Hasn't quite gone to plan for them. So, yeah, I'd expect Chelsea to do the business quite comfortably.
On to Group E now, and Champions League runners-up Inter Milan are in this group, along with Argentina's River Plate, Monterrey of Mexico and Urawa Red Diamonds of Japan. Looks like it could be a pretty competitive group. Mark, how do you see this one?
I'm going for Urawa Reds to finish bottom of the group. I was mentioning transfer marks earlier on there. The value of the Red squad is 2.3 million. In total, which I mean, makes them, you know, really vulnerable if that's to be sort of, you know, if that's a realistic valuation of them. Interested to see how River get on. Got some sort of Argentinian internationals, past and present, Lanzini, Montiel, a young player they've just signed from Real Madrid. Don't know that much about, well, I don't know anything about him, but apart from the fact he's 17 and signed for a lot of money, but he's going to just stay at River for now. Mastan Tuono, might have butchered that surname, apologies if so, but I would imagine that they would finish not in last spot. Inter, shell-shocked by their Champions League defeat and the fact that Simone Inzaghi has left. Christian Kivu is the current gaffer for them. That feels like just a real caretaker job there. I don't expect him to get the job full-time, but you wouldn't expect them to finish last in that group. And then the Mexicans hide Monterrey that have got absolute, just a mixed bag of players. So Corona, somebody you remember from the World Cup, Acampos, Olivier Torres, Canales, Hector Moreno, Salcedo, and then Sergio Ramos as well. So an interesting squad that they've put together. They have also changed their manager. Apparently the last one fell out with quite a few of the players. So they brought in the Spanish manager, Torrent, as well. So, yeah, I thought that the Asian side to finish bottom at 5-4 was the way to go here.
I'm thinking there could be a few cards dished out in this group, James, in terms of these fixtures. How do you see this group going?
Yeah, I think this is one where South America could topple Europe, actually. You know, into at that chastening end of the season, you know, not only the Champions League final, but being pipped to the Serie A title by Napoli as well. And obviously Simone Inzaghi's left for Al Hilal, actually, who are also in the competition. I don't know if this is like when you're kind of waiting for Ryan Moore to choose his ride in the derby. I'm not sure if that's a punting pointer that we should all be on Al Hilal, but River Plate appeal about 9-4 to win the group. Actually, I just think this could be a competition too far for Inter. You know, we've mentioned throughout the Champions League run, they've got an aging squad, and River Plate, you know, for all the concerns over the strength of their domestic competition, they're very hard to beat. Lost only one of their 16 matches in the first phase. and we'd need to do another podcast, I think, to explain the format of the Argentinian league. But they lost in the Apertura quarterfinals, the playoffs. That was only on penalties as well. So they are hard to beat. Top their group in the Copa Libertadores. So I think they could be awkward opponents for Inter.
I think one word that we might use quite often in the Club World Cup is an eclectic mix of teams. And I certainly think that is the best way to describe Group F, because we've got teams from four different continents. Borussia Dortmund of Germany, Fluminense of Brazil, Ulsan of South Korea, and South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns. James, it really is a mixture in Group F. Dortmund, not necessarily the danger that they've been in recent years in terms of the Champions League. How do you think they'll fare here?
Yeah, I think this sets up nicely for Dortmund as well. You had that spectacular end to the Bundesliga campaign after a pretty difficult season, but they won seven of their last eight to nick fourth spot in the Champions League qualification. The only game they dropped points in was away to Bayern Munich, so no shame in that. And you know, I was mentioning earlier that getting your transfer business done, they've signed Joe Bellingham and managed to fend off some bids from Chelsea for the English winger Jamie Gittin. So I think Dortmund look the class act in this, you know, certainly progressive given the end of the season. If Fluminense were thrashed in the 2023 final, I'm sure everyone remembers that game. You know, scrambling to Wikipedia to look that up, thrashed by Manchester City, and I think Thiago Silva will be captaining them at the age of 40. So there's a hope for the veterans yet.
Yeah, that potentially might be the case with a few veterans putting themselves in the spotlight in terms of the Club World Cup. Mark, Group F, as I say, a probably random mix of different styles as well as teams.
Yeah, I think they'll probably finish roughly in betting order here, really. Good opportunity for Dortmund to win the group, and then, you know, it looks not, you know, a decent enough draw. So they might actually be a lively outsider to go well in the whole competition. Haven't got much on the Sundowns, and as far as Ulsan are concerned, the best I've got is that I was in Korea in December and was talking about their chances, and they, you know, none of the kind of football locals I spoke to thought that they would get out of the group. So, a bit of inside info there.
So it looks like it could be a Dortmund-Fluminense double in Group F. As we move on to Group G, Manchester City are set to come up against Champions League rivals in Juventus. Al Ain of UAE are also in Group G, as are Wydad AC of Morocco. City, Mark, will be amongst the favourites to go deep in this competition. We've already questioned how serious some of the big European teams will take it. I think after the frustrating season that City have had, Pep Guardiola will be really keen to sort of end on a high.
Yeah, well, the owner came out, didn't he, and said that you know, this is the start of next season and that they need to take it seriously. He didn't say there's 100 million reasons to take it seriously, but there are. You know, City are in the middle of a rebuild that looks fairly impressive, I would say, on paper. Probably more dramatic than, you know, people would have been expecting 12 months ago. It wouldn't have been I can't think of any observers that would have said the team would have changed that dramatically, as what it has done from what ended sort of last season, going into sort of, you know, now. So I think they'll go well. It's an important group to win, because if you finish second, you're likely to play Real Madrid in the last 16. So it's definitely one where you want to be at it from the start. I haven't got a bet in this group, but I expect Man City to win. Juve presumably will finish second. Although their coach, Igor Tudor, is sort of in the job, but Juve are actively seeking sort of better choices. So he's sort of just hanging around, hoping that they can't get a better manager in. And I haven't got much on the other two, but I did notice that Rui Patricio has just signed for Al Ain. So goalkeeper that was decent about 15 years ago, but when I've seen him more recently, he's been absolutely shocking.
Yeah, I mean, Juventus, Mark's already touched upon it there, James. Poor season for them, really. Not where they expected to be when they started the season. Managerial changes, and certainly if there was going to be a European team in danger here in this group, you would think it would be them.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, yeah, Thiago Motta was appointed with quite a fanfare and looked a really, really good choice for Juve. It didn't work out. I mean, you know, they only lost four games in Serie A, but real lack of cutting edge. Drew 16 of their league matches, and that obviously left them, you know, well behind in Napoli and Inter and scrambling to make the Champions League. So, yeah, I think there's a clear gulf between the top two in this group and the other two. I think there's probably quite a gulf between City and Juventus. I mean, I think you're quite right. City's Champions League campaign should focus the minds. I mean, you know, saw they made a real mess of the new format of the Champions League phase. So, you know, I'd expect them to kind of fly out of the traps in this, and there shouldn't be any complacency. But yeah, you know, I think Mark mentioned the overhaul at City. You know, they've already signed three players this summer, brought in, what, four players in January as well. It is, you know, there's an element of panic to it. I'm sure these signings have been kind of well researched. But you know, it is not kind of the smoother rebuild that maybe top clubs would prefer to have. So it'd be interesting to see how they go. But yeah, I think they should finish top comfortably.
Well, finally, as far as the groups are concerned, we move on to Group H, where Real Madrid find themselves alongside Austria's Red Bull Salzburg, Al Hilal of Saudi Arabia, and Pachuca of Mexico. Again, another team we keep mentioning, these sides that have not necessarily performed as we expected, James, in the season just gone. Real Madrid will want to try and set the record straight themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And exactly what we've been saying about City, really. You know, they're runners-up to Barcelona in La Liga and the Copa del Rey, outclassed by Arsenal in the Champions League. They did win the UEFA Super Cup and the FIFA Intercontinental Cup. So, you know, we can call them treble-chasing Real Madrid. There's always a trophy for someone if you look hard enough. But, I think...
Not Arsenal, Milt.
apart from Arsenal, yeah. Women's Champions League, we're dining out on. But yeah, this group looks a great chance for them to make a flying start. I mean, yeah, Salzburg, technically by this criteria, one of the best 12 teams in Europe. But you know, we saw them in the Champions League, lost 7 out of 8, goal difference of -22, and pretty average in the Austrian Bundesliga as well. They finished as runners up there, so not thrilled about their chances. And we've mentioned a few golden oldies who could be popping up during the tournament. Pachuca striker Salomon Rondon, or the familiar name for West Brom, Newcastle, Everton fans, 250-1 to be top goal scorer in the tournament.
Interesting. We expect Real Madrid, Mark, to cruise through, I would suggest, Group H. I think what's going to be more interesting is how Salzburg match up against Al Hilal and Pachuca.
Yeah, I totally agree. Real Madrid, should win this one easily enough. You look at that names in that Al Hilal squad, and you can see why Simone Inzaghi fancied that move. I mean, I'm sure it had nothing to do with the 60 million tax free that he's being paid. But Koulibaly, Cancelo, Lodi, Ruben Neves, Milenkovic Savic. Malcolm, do you remember him? Everyone used to joke, does he play in the middle when he was a winger? You got Mitrovic and Al Darsari, who is the best Saudi player as well. So I think that they'll be a decent side, got a good opportunity to progress. But I also think that the Mexican teams pay big wages. That's why we've kind of got a lot of these golden oldies there. And they've also got former Chelsea player, and blink and you miss him, Kennedy. He was like the longest serving player, wasn't he, for a while at Stamford Bridge without ever playing. They also apparently tried to sign Neymar just before the start of the tournament, didn't manage to get it done. They've got a new manager, who knows whether that will work in their favour or not. But I just thought Salzburg to finish bottom at 11-4 was the way to go. I mean, you're backing the outsider of three or in that three horse race. And like Al Hilal, I don't see them finishing bottom with you know, their manager and squad. So if it's them or the Mexican team, I just thought that 11-4 was a value bet there to finish bottom.
Okay, well, that is the groups confirmed and gone through. Mark and James will run you through their best bets next for the tournament.
Do you want football free bets? All the best offers from your favourite bookmakers can be found in one place. Check out racingpost.com/free-bets to find out more. Racing Post, stay ahead of the field.
So, time now to look at the outright markets in terms of the winners and top goal scorer, of course, at the Club World Cup. And we'll start in terms of the outright prices. Real Madrid, 4-1 favourites as things stand. PSG around about 9-2, with Manchester City 5-1, Bayern Munich 7-1, Chelsea 11-1, and then both Atletico and Inter Milan 14-1. Not a massive surprise there, Mark, to see the European clubs dominating in terms of the outright markets. Anything that caught your eye in terms of the prices and maybe some outside shots?
Yeah, so I think here, you know, you can make a case for a sort of a number of them European teams. And yeah, you know, it's what I was saying right at the top. I mean, it's going to feel like a Champions League quarter final once we get right into the nitty gritty of the competition. I sort of looked at it from two points of view, really. You need to have quality, and I think you need to have motivation. And I do wonder whether the teams that fell short this season domestically, there might just be a bit more riding on it for them. So, you know, PSG were playing, you know, a Champions League final not that long ago, and now they're turning straight around. So I'm going for Man City to win it. You mentioned they're 5-1. You might even be able to get some 11-2. Rodri's back from injury. You know, they had a lot of defensive concerns at the start of the season and then throughout the season, really. But in terms of the squad list, they've all travelled. They look like they've got a decent defensive spine to them once more. I think Reinders in midfield is an absolute class signing. I think he might end up really sort of propelling City back to a bit more dynamism and somebody that wants to, you know, run beyond. And then Marmoush added something when he arrived in January, and Haaland's back to full fitness as well. So, but you can make a case for probably four or five of the European teams. I'm going for City. If you wanted a second go, it's Atletico Madrid. They're in the same group as Paris Saint-Germain. But even if you finish second, you end up playing the winner from Group A, which is that Porto group. So it doesn't really matter if you finish first or second. I wouldn't have thought Atletico, speaking to somebody in Spain, they were saying that they'll absolutely be off for their lives. They're really up for this competition. I mean, you wouldn't expect anything else, really, of Diego Simeone. Only went out of the Champions League in that ludicrous penalty shootout loss to Real Madrid. And if they have to play them in another final, it'll be game over for Atletico. So do back them each way. But, you know, got as you'd expect of Atletico, top goalkeeper in Oblak, really strong defence, lot of depth to their midfield. And then up front, Alvarez, I think, has had a really strong first season. So they were my two against the field.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, Mills, as Mark said there about Atletico. Simeone's going to know his South American football. I'm sure he's probably had scouts out watching the Brazilian and Argentinian sides in particular who are going to be featuring in the Club World Cup. I just wonder whether something like that might make an impact.
Yeah, definitely. It's certainly worth considering. I mean, you know, European football is such a global hotspot, isn't it, that I think, you know, every squad really is going to have a few specialists in South American football as well. So I actually think PSG will have the motivation to kick on. They've already been nibbled at in the outright market. I think the last of the 5-1 has disappeared, but I think they appeal. You know, just keeping it simple sometimes is the best option when it comes to punting. And you know, they were the outstanding team in the Champions League even before that performance in the final. And you know, just looking at for a team who did the treble, they're really lightly raced, actually. Just looking through their league stats, and none of Dembele, Vitinha, Marquinhos, Nuno Mendes, none of them started more than 20 league matches. I think that will be an advantage. I think it was a huge advantage during their Champions League run. I think it could be again. And as Mark mentioned with Atletico, you know, coming through that group, you've got a nice last 16 tie in prospect. So yeah, I'm keeping faith with PSG. You know, they want to rule the world, don't they? They've had to wait a long time for that first Champions League title, but I think they'll be bang up for this competition. And the others, I think we mentioned earlier, Borussia Dortmund at 25-1, I think are a really nice each way play. You know, there's only about three or four clubs who are shorter than them in the betting to qualify from their group. They've got a lovely draw there and finish the Bundesliga season in fantastic fashion.
OK, well, let's move on to the top goal scorer betting now. Not majorly a surprise to see the names that are at the top of the odds. Kylian Mbappe is around about 9-2. Erling Haaland, 11-2. Harry Kane, 7-1. Ousmane Dembele, 10-1. And Seru Hirasi of Borussia Dortmund is around about 12-1. Mark, we'll start with you again here in terms of the goal scorers. The likely names at the top of the list, is it hard to see past them?
You look at the group stage and you go through it, you think, well, Harry Kane might score 20 against, what some people call it, a pub team from New Zealand. But then you could say the same about half of the other strikers. I do wonder whether there'll be heavy rotation. You know, we've spoken a lot about fitness and you don't want to burn the players out at this stage. And they will be pretty tired and, you know, it's going to be hot, certainly in sort of the earlier kickoffs in the US. So I am expecting rotation. That's what's just put me off a number of the obvious candidates. But somebody that should be an obvious candidate but doesn't really get much of a mention is Gerassi of Borussia Dortmund. Absolutely filled his boots in the Champions League. We've already spoken about the fact that Dortmund have got a peach of a draw. I'd be very surprised if they don't make it to the quarterfinals. I nearly put that up as a bet, actually, Dortmund to reach the quarterfinals. But then when I was looking at that, I then thought, well, you know, if they're going to get last eight, maybe last four, you start to look at their striker. And Gerassi hasn't got huge amounts of competition. I think he will get most of their goals. I think Dortmund will be one of those teams that take it seriously, and I'll go for him. Do you want my golden ball suggestions now,
yeah,
Warren? So this is player of the tournament, and it does lead in actually to the top goal scorer. This tournament is Infantino's baby. I don't think they're going to give the player of the tournament to some hipster choice, you know, like the goalkeeper for a Mexican side that rates that reaches the quarterfinals. It's going to be big names. I'm pretty sure of that. So, like Erling Haaland, if you fancy him to be the top goal scorer, why not back him for the golden ball at 14-1? He is capable of really bullying weak teams. You know, it's his absolute forte. And at 14-1, you know, if I think Man City are going to go deep, then he has to be a runner for the golden ball. And then PSG, yeah, you could argue they're the best team in the competition. They've got three outstanding forwards, four if you include Barker off the bench, but just at the prices, Kvaratskhelia at 25-1, I just thought he was as likely as anyone to sort of shine for PSG. So Gerassi, top goal scorer at 12-1, and then in the player of the tournament, Haaland and Kvaratskhelia at 14s and 25s.
Yeah, just to mention a couple of other bigger prices as well, by the way. Mark's mentioned how Atletico might progress. Julian Alvarez is 20-1 to be the tournament's top scorer. And Lautaro Martinez, of course, who had such a big impact in the Champions League this year, also 20-1. Miltz, where are you looking here in terms of the top goal scorer market?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Harry Kane as my main selection. You know, he's been criticised for stat padding throughout his career. That's exactly what you want from your Club World Cup top scorer selection. You know, that game against Auckland, you can just picture Kane kind of ruthlessly converting an injury time penalty to make it 8-1 or something, can't you? You know, he's scored in both of England's games despite some pretty disjointed performances from the three lines as a whole. Top goal scorer in both of his Bundesliga campaigns for Bayern. And it's just looking at kind of, you know, a player who fills his boots against weak opponents. You know, he scored three league hat-tricks this season for Bayern. four goals when they thrashed Dynamo Zagreb in the Champions League. And yeah, I think he's a really solid bet at around 7-1. And the other one I like at a much bigger price is Chelsea's Nicholas Jackson, who I'm convinced at some point the floodgates are going to open for him. He's still a very young player, and 24 goals in 59 Premier League starts, I think, is a pretty decent haul, given that it's always been a bit of uncertainty around Chelsea while he's been there. He's a centre forward for a team who are prominent in the betting. We mentioned Chelsea have got a nice draw in the group, and I think he could fill his boots. He scored four goals in his last five club appearances for Chelsea and impressed for Senegal in that win against England.
Well, that just about rounds up our look at the Club World Cup. I suppose I should apologise in advance for anybody who knows myself, Mark or James, looking a bit tired over the next few weeks, staying up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to watch these games. It's certainly going to be interesting to see how the new format works. And big thanks to Mark and James for running us through their betting suggestions for the tournament. Don't forget, of course, to like, subscribe and comment on the Racing Post YouTube channel. If you like your golf, remember that the sweet spot, a reminder, I should say, that the sweet spot with Steve Palmer will continue throughout the summer months. We'll also have some other sports video content for you to look forward to as well, including a look ahead to the British and Irish Lions tour of Australia. Plus, the big kickoff preview will be back to look ahead to the Premier League and EFL seasons as well. In the meantime, enjoy your sport over the coming weeks, and please remember to gamble responsibly.